You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast special. Ooh. The idea behind these is we're going to have one question and one answer, but it's not going to be answered by me. It's going to be answered by an expert. Today's question is, Dear Lovejoy, how do I deal with anxiety? And Mark, remind the listener, the great Buddhist proverb, one of the famous ones, anxiety is a
bitch.
Yes, it is. It ruins people's lives. It ruins all our lives. Everyone suffers a bit from anxiety, but it can go to extremes. Today's expert is Chloe Brotheridge, and she's written a book called The Anxiety Solution, which I've had a read of. It's very good. Chloe is a clinical hypnotherapist and a nutritionist. I wonder if she can make an onion taste like an apple.
No.
Shall I ask her that?
No.
I've got to ask her that. Come on.
At the end.
Listeners would not be happy.
At the end.
She's a hypnotherapist. We've all seen it.
She's not Paul McKenna.
She's a nutritionist and a hypnotherapist. It means she can make all the food that you don't want to eat taste like apples. Do you suffer from anxiety, Mark?
Yes, I do. And I have done quite severely. I've had panic attacks and stuff.
Have you?
I've had CBT. I've had cognitive behavioural therapy for
work.
Yeah, mostly. Still get it a bit, but you know.
You gave up caffeine, didn't you?
Yeah.
He keeps advising me to give up caffeine, but I've given up everything.
I think really, so. You're so laid back, I think you'd fall asleep if you gave up caffeine.
I do like a bit of caffeine. It's one of those things I managed to give up most. I don't drink much anymore. And I really, you know, I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I just like caffeine. So I'm like,
well, maybe you say you don't do drugs. We've got podcast evidence.
Was that three podcasts ago where I was off my face? But they weren't recreational drugs. They were medical drugs sorting out my problems. All right. It's going to be interesting. But before we talk to Chloe, there's a couple of things. First of all, we've got to sort out. I want to pick up on Mark laughing uncontrollably at me when I came up with a brilliant solution for giving up smoking on last week's podcast. If you didn't hear last week's podcast, this happened. This one's a good one. If you never put it, this is for smokers, by the way. This is for smokers who want to give up. If you never put another cigarette in your mouth, it will be impossible to ever smoke again. What's so funny about that? What's so funny about that? It's true.
Is that it?
Yeah. You don't like that? Okay, it's the same for chocolate. You don't put it in your mouth, you can't eat it.
I think we should change this to Tim points out the bleeding obvious.
Yeah, all very funny, Mark. Very funny. People enjoyed you laughing.
You'll set me off again.
It was so funny. You didn't even have a split second to contemplate it. You just went immediately laughing. And he didn't know what I was going to say either. That's the problem. But anyway, I've given it a bit more thought, and I have to say, I think I'm spot on. If you can't control...
Don't do it again.
No, listen. Let me just talk it through, because I don't feel like I gave myself justice. And I think I'm onto something here. I really do think I'm onto something here. If you can't control the mental aspect of a problem, you might be able to control the physical bit of it. And this is true. I was thinking about it. It could work for everything, right? It is your finger, and it's your arm or your fingers, your arm. It's your eyes. They're all involved, and it's your mouth and everything. They're all, stop it, you're laughing again. They're all involved in the process of smoking, right? So you might not know how to move your arm. You don't know how to move. You can move your arm, but you don't know how to do it, do you? But what you can do, no, you don't. You don't know how physically you make your arm move. It just does it. Do you know what I mean? As you're making a cup of tea, you don't think, I'm now moving my arm over there to pick up the cup. It just happens. But what you can do is you can consciously stop something happening. So if you want to give up smoking, you can actually put the cigarette in your hand and you can light it and you can look at it. You're using your hand, your fingers, your arm, your eyes. And then you go, I'm not going to stick it in my mouth. And so brain one is going, I want a cigarette. Brain two, the other bit of your brain is going, you might want one, brain one, but it means I have to move my arms. And I'm not going to do that because I don't want to smoke anymore. And brain one's going, oh, go on. And brain two's going, no, I'm not moving my arm. So you can't smoke. Brain one's going, please. Brain two's going, no, I've told you I'm not doing it. If you can control...
How have you not been sectioned?
If you can control brain two, you can control brain one. That is brilliant advice. The Buddhists say, if you want to be good, get physical. I'm going to write a book about this because it works with everything. Don't want to eat chocolate. Don't stick it in your mouth. I'm really bored with my partner, but I kind of like really, I don't know, I'm a bit lovesick. Just don't see them. Don't go there. Don't acknowledge them. It works with everything. I hate my job.
You're very repetitive.
Do you know what? I'm onto something here. I'm onto something. Any publishers out there? We've also had a follow-up email from Tracy. If you remember, Tracy was on last week's show. She sent the email. She'll be getting a certificate, a loyalty certificate, and which we invented on last week's show, which if you write in on the email, you will get a loyalty certificate. And she wrote a reply to her. We did her problem. It's basically she wrote saying that she'd been married twice and both husbands had cheated on her. And she didn't know whether she could ever trust again. Well, she wrote in with a reply for us. So I'll just read it out. It's a lovely reply, actually. Dear TV Tim and Mark, thank you so much for your advice about trust. I've just listened to your latest podcast and was excited to hear that you'd received and considered my email. I cried all the way through your reply. Oh, that's nice. Mainly because you were so right in terms of ignoring signs both times. I had outs both times about 4 months in. Yes, we all do. But like Mark said, I decided to see the good in people and felt the good would outweigh the bad. Obviously, it didn't. I have decided that, and you have confirmed it too, that I want to go on casual dates and to spend more time with people I get on with. And if something comes of that, then great. I'm not going looking for my next husband. I'm just looking for fun, kindness with a friend with benefits. I'll come back to that. But you're good at this stuff, you two. Keep on going. As the famous Buddhist once said, ignore TV Tim and you miss a golden opportunity. Yes, that is that famous Buddhist proverb.
What have you started?
I said, Tracy, proud certificate owner, cough, cough, and member. We haven't actually sent her a certificate yet. We've got to get this sorted. That's the problem.
Well, I've got to do them and you've got to sign them. And then okay. We've got all that sorts of stuff to get on.
Just going back to the bit where she says, I'm just looking for fun with kindness and a friend with benefits. That's fine as long as you realise that when you actually indulge in the benefits bit of it, your hormones are going to start flooding into your body. This is my belief. The chemistry starts happening and you will possibly mix that up for love again. So if you're going to do that, really remember what your principle is of doing it, that you're just there for the benefits, because that's the confusing bit for us all. Our body floods with testosterone. I can't say the word. Say it for me, Mark.
Testosterone.
That's it. Or whatever. Or estrogen. All those hormones go flooding through and makes you feel good. You're trying to procreate and then you mistake that for love. Don't do that. The best thing to do is wait till you're really secure, I think, and go on lots of dates with the person you like as a friend. You know what? I know everyone's going to laugh, but it makes sense, this.
At you, Tim, no.
If you could go 4 seasons, 12 months without indulging in the benefits, you would 100% know whether that person is right or not. A comfortable slipper, Mark. A comfortable slipper. But 12 months is a long time. In our society, we want it now. It's the third date. Why haven't we done it? Something like that. First date, why haven't we done it? Let's move on, shall we? But I'll tell you what, though, Tracy, thank you very much for writing in again. I do think we really don't listen enough. If somebody says to you, I like partying, oh, I like going out. I like partying. That doesn't mean when you start dating them, they're going to go, hey, I'm going to stop now and sit on the sofa with you. That means they like partying. They like going out. If someone says to you, man or woman says to you, I want a baby, that means they want a baby. They're prioritizing baby. They're not prioritizing you. You've got to listen to what people are actually saying to you when you get involved in a relationship. So, you know, I like a drink means they like drinking. They're not going to stop because they've met you. Listen to it and also read the signs. When you get that feeling in your gut, which we've all had, that one where you think something's not quite right here. It's not right. We've had, before we go on to Chloe, we're going to talk to her about her book, The Anxiety Solution, in just a minute. We've got another email in here, which we love. We're getting the emails in now. All right, let's just do this. If you want to send an email, here's the email address.
If what you want to ask is just too long for Twitter, don't stress. We've got an easy to remember email address. This is the reason for this overly long song. It's dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, this one comes... I'll read it because he tells us what he wants to be called in the letter. Dear Lovejoy and Rimmer, oops, Mark. I'm loving your work. It's very funny. And your laugh is infectious, in the words of Buddha himself.
Oh, again. Oh, no.
A laugh a day keeps sadness away. He's true there. By the way, this email is titled My Fourth Favourite Podcast. I need some advice on two parts. Firstly, I'm stuck in a dead-end job. Dead-end but secure job, but recently discovered a passion for cooking. Do I stick or do I twist? He sent some pictures of his cooking as well. It looks very good. He looks like a top chef there. Secondly, I have a skin condition, psoriasis, and it hampers me when trying to find a partner, female. Do I tell them straight away or wait until the moment when we perhaps undress? My three other favourite podcasts before your excellent work are at number three, Athletico Mints. Very good. Bob Mortimer, love that. Number two, The Magic Sponge. And number one, The Infinite Monkey Cage. So the competition is high, although I think a special offering of Dear Love Athletico Mints Joy, sounds a bit weird that, would work wonders with Bob being the highest level Buddha in the Northeast. Actually, I'm sure Bob has plenty of famous Buddhist proverbs up his sleeve. Then he says, genuinely love your work and outlook on life. Keep it up. And please refer to me as Mr. TW on the podcast. Much love. So thank you, TW. Mark sounds like Kevin Gallen when he laughs, by the way. Just an observation. Okay, so that's in two parts. I think on the first part, let's talk about the job bit, first of all. We really need more facts like age and how many people you're supporting, how many animals you're supporting and things like that. Who is reliant on your income? The answer is the same, I think, but how gung-ho you are is different. The general answer in the famous Buddhist proverb is, and this is true, you find a job you love and you never have to work again. If you do love cooking, then you've basically got to follow your dream and go and do that, because there's plenty of opportunities to do it. That's an industry which is not going anywhere, is it? Cooking, being a chef. I mean, people are going out more than ever. But though I would say be careful with cooking, though. Cooking for friends is very different from cooking for customers. When you're at a Michelin star restaurant, I imagine it's good fun because you can spend ages over the meal. There's very few covers there. When you're in a restaurant and you're churning out meal yeah. after meal after meal after meal, it's very long hours. You don't get to socialize because you're always working yourself. When you've got a day off, you're knackered. So I think chefs have quite a lot of problems, stress level problems and things like that.
Oh, yeah,
because it's quite high powered. That doesn't mean it's not for you.
I was a chef once.
Did you enjoy it?
I was a really good chef. Yeah, I was at Chessington World of Adventures making burgers.
Flipping burgers?
Yeah.
Did you stink?
Yeah.
That's the other thing with it. You're always going to smell a bit. I tell you what, when I was on MasterChef, I really enjoyed learning all the cooking and doing all those bits. But then they stuck me in the ambulance service to do, you know, when they do, they take
oh, yeah, they
you
do the big, yeah.
Yeah, you go somewhere to cook. And I ended up in the ambulance service thing and I had to make a huge amount of cottage pie for someone, and then you suddenly go, oh, this is really hard work, vats of yeah. it. And I was doing things like, you know, the bit of the carrot, the end bit, which where the leaves come out of, and you cut that off.
Yeah,
I was cutting that off and putting it to one side, and the woman came over and go, what are you doing? And I said, well, but no, we need us, you know, margins that goes in, everything goes
what,
in
the little manky bit yeah. with all the
honestly, the meat was kind of grey because there was so much of it. And then they get this thing called browning sauce out to make it. Honestly, it tasted fine. But the browning sauce makes it brown to make it aesthetically pleasing as well as tastefully pleasing. And then the next part of the MasterChef thing, I had to go into a Thai restaurant. And then I was like basically a flame like would come off a jet thing to cook the food in the wok. I quite enjoyed that. But again, the turn. But the jet is amazing because it's got water around it to cool it really quickly. And then the jet in the middle. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I learned how to cook Thai food there. Both sides of things. They were quite exciting. But for one only child, I mean, it's not up my street at all. It's so stressful. An Aggie off, what's that program called? The cleaning program. How clean is your house or something? She burnt me with hot fat, by the way. Be careful of burns if you're doing that. I'll tell you more about that in another podcast because it's quite interesting, the difference between cooking. But look, he's got one other problem. He's got psoriasis.
So what's your overall thing to him?
Do it. Oh, you've got to go for it. But it's how you go for it. It's if you've got a good, steady, secure job, you could start off by just picking up some shifts somewhere to see whether you like it or not. Maybe take a week off work and pick up some shifts, or go in and ask someone if you can just trail and do it a bit. Go, you know, no one minds being off. If you walk into someone and say, excuse me, I really would like to be a chef. Can I come in and watch? Someone's going to let you do that.
The hours are, when you start, the hours are horrific.
Yeah.
And the pay is unbelievably bad. You have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, but go in. Yeah, but if it's what you're loving, yeah, then it doesn't matter. Walk into a restaurant and say to them, excuse me, is it all right if I come and watch you work? I tell you what, most people would love it. People ask me all the time for work experience. did I just say that? No, you can't. Your kids can't have work experience with me. So I get that all the time. Now, listen, so I think you've got to go for it, basically. The other problem is psoriasis. And it's one of those things that I can really understand that. We've all got problems that we hate about ourselves, but you've got to, it's so cliche.
Well, so just to clear up what psoriasis is.
It's like a skin.
Complaint,
yeah. So like, it's a bit.
Itchy, flaky.
Yeah, flaky
sore,
skin, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it comes and goes. I think diet's one of those big things with that. But I've got two friends who have got it. And one friend who's got it is quite prolific, I've got to say, with the ladies. And he just said, it's not my problem, it's their problem. If they don't like it, I don't mind. I've got it and that's me. I think that's the attitude.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. I tell you what, let's ask Chloe this later.
Okay.
Because Chloe talks about anxiety and it must be very anxious when you're about to get nudie doody with a lady and you've got psoriasis. But I think that's roughly what she'll say. That's the solution. Anyway, this is a special. So we're going to be talking to Chloe in just a few minutes. Well, just a few seconds' time. Let's cue the theme tune.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into dear Lovejoy.
Hello, Chloe Brotheridge. Brotheridge.
Correct. Brotheridge.
Brotheridge.
That's the one.
Welcome to my kitchen. Thank you for coming. We're going to talk to you in a minute. But first of all, I've got to say, I am just a TV presenter. So a minute ago when I was giving advice to Tracy and to TW, if you are going to take advice off of me, remember, I'm not trained in anything. You'd be stupid to do it. But Chloe, you are properly trained, aren't you?
I am. I'm a nutritionist and a hypnotherapist.
Hypnotherapist. What does a hypnotherapist do?
Well, I don't dangle a watch in front of people's faces. I don't click my fingers at any point, but I help people to make changes subconsciously.
Mark's shaking his head. Come on, let me do the question now. Come on, Mark. Can you make an onion taste like an apple?
Everyone asked. I knew you were going to ask me this. I knew you were going
to... Oh, my seat's really hot. How have you done that? No, so what does a hypnotherapist actually do? How do you do it?
I talk to people and help them to get into a very deep kind of state of mind. It feels a bit like being in a daydream. So you don't kind of lose control, you don't fall asleep, but you get into this very kind of relaxed, daydreamy state. And you become very receptive to taking on board ideas that are going to help you when you're in that deeper state. So you can't make someone do something they don't want to do. I don't do sort of stage hypnosis or anything.
No.
But it's very good for helping you to make changes subconsciously.
So you could change the way people perceive life or the world.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, you've got a book out. It's called The Anxiety Solution. Before we get stuck into what the solution is. Tell us what anxiety is to begin with.
So it's an umbrella term to describe a lot of different symptoms. And the main symptom would be worry. Probably people with generalized anxiety disorder worry about almost everything. They'll find anything to worry about. It could be things like panic attacks. It could be certain types of anxiety where you're scared to leave the house or scared to go on aeroplanes, more specific phobias. So it's a huge range of symptoms, but it's fear, it's worry, it's having a racing heart and that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, so regular listeners will know there's the famous Buddhist proverb that I heard once called anxiety is a bitch, and it does ruin lives, doesn't it, basically?
Absolutely, yeah. It can stop you from being happy, it can stop you from doing what you want to do, having relationships, loads of things.
I didn't know I had anxiety until I read Matt Haig's book, Reason to Stay Alive. I've had some mental health issues, which I won't bother going to right now, but when I read his book, he suddenly started talking about anxiety and I thought, oh, that's what I have. But I always assumed anxiety was just when people say they have panic attacks and they sweat and they go, hyper, and you know, they give them bags, don't they, to breathe into and stuff. That's what I thought anxiety was, and that's what I thought panic attacks were. And I didn't have those symptoms, but I definitely have the symptoms of ruminating and worrying and just ruining my life because I'm thinking about something coming up.
Yeah, I think a lot of anxiety is thinking about the future and every possible thing that could go wrong, and it's not a nice way to live if you're sort of worrying about that all the time.
How did you get into specialising in anxiety then? I assume you specialise in it because you've written a book on it.
I do, yeah, I do. I had my own issues with anxiety myself. I had a lot of panic attacks as a teenager, and it took me about 10 years to sort of realise it was a problem. I thought, oh, this is just the way I am. You know, there's nothing I can do about it. And I started to sort of learn more about it and got some therapy and trained as a hypnotherapist and learned actually you can make changes. You don't have to suffer and be stuck with feeling bad.
So you trained because you had anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I'd listened to a lot of recordings, hypnosis MP3s and things like that, and found them really effective and decided to train because of that, really.
You're quite open in your book, aren't you? You tell a lot about your own life, which is you're quite intimate. You talk a lot about all the troubles you went through. Was that a conscious decision so people could relate to it?
There's a lot of oversharing, I think.
I feel like I know you really well. No. I just met you.
I think when I work with people, the thing they want to know is that they're not alone. And I think that is such a comfort to people, to know that you're not the only one, you know, that's up late at night worrying about certain things. You're not the only one, you know, having panic attacks. And it's a big comfort, I think. And the more we speak about it and the more we're open about sort of mental health issues, I think people are more likely to get help and to ask people for help. And I think it's just a good thing to be open.
When I started in TV 20 years ago, if you'd ever mentioned the idea that you had a mental health problem, you wouldn't work again. I really believe that. As the time went on, and I suffered from really bad depression once, and I used to go onto my TV show and my co-presenter used to go, come on, Tim Simon. He used to go, we've only got 15 minutes left. You can do it. Stuff like that. And I never told anyone. He was the only one who knew. And I wouldn't say it now. If I had it, I'd just go walk in there and say, oh, I feel really depressed. You've got to help me through the show. I think things have changed dramatically about how people perceive your mental health. Probably not enough yet. But I think people are, especially men, are now coming to, because men always stopped talking about it. And I think men are now coming to terms of saying, actually, I don't feel great.
Yeah, I think it's starting to be talked about a lot in the media, a lot of more books about these sort of topics, and celebrities coming forward and talking about their struggles. So I think it's only a good thing.
Does everyone have it?
Does everyone have mental health?
Yeah, does everyone have anxiety problems? And because there's more people you speak to. Mark here, we were talking about it earlier. He's suffered a bit. I've suffered a bit. I wouldn't say I'm extreme. I don't know where the Mark is. I know him well. I don't think he is. But do we all suffer from it a bit, do you think?
I think everyone experiences fear from time to time. And we all have mental health. You know, we all, in the same way that we all have a level of physical health. And it's on a continuum. And at different times in your life, you might have better or worse mental health, and I think we're all on that continuum. But there's a lot of people that don't understand anxiety, and you know, we'll tell people, you know, just snap out of it, just stop worrying. What have you got to panic about? What have you got to worry about? And actually, that's not helpful advice when you're really
That's always the problem for someone like me, because you're in a position where everyone thinks I've got the ideal life because I'm on TV and I've got sort of you know, a few quid and stuff like that. So it's like, what have you got to be low about? And it's that's always hard. But when you're writing your book, as I said earlier, you're quite open. How did your parents perceive it? Because obviously you talk a lot about your childhood where you're quite miserable. It must be, I've got three children, it must be really upsetting for them to read that.
I was quite nervous for my parents to read it. I think I was more nervous about my parents reading it than anyone else. I don't blame, you know, I don't think we can really blame parents. I think parents are doing the best they can. And, you know, unless you're a perfect human being, you're probably going to mess your kids up to some extent. No one is perfect. So you're pretty much guaranteed to mess your kids up to some degree. So there's definitely no blame, I think. I think blaming is not a good idea.
I always say to my children, don't be like me. Whatever you do, don't be like me. Look at me and do it differently. What can you do with your children, though, as you're watching them grow up? What as a parent, should you do to stop anxiety? Is it just continually asking them how they're feeling?
I think having that openness to talk about things and a space where they can express how they're feeling and not sort of judging it, just listening. Also, there's something about praise. And when you praise a child for their achievement, sometimes they take on board the message that they need to achieve in order to be worthy and valuable. So it's important to, as much as possible, praise people for their effort rather than achievement. So saying, yo, you tried really hard at that, rather than, you know, you're really special, most intelligent person in the world or something. So yeah, praising their effort, I think, is important.
Sorry about that noise. We probably picked up on the microphones there. That's the cat, Princess Lilac, who features a lot on the podcast because she always wanders in and out as we're doing it. The other bit that in your, I just really liked this the other day. I was reading your Twitter feed and you discussed, can I just read it to you? When your ex-boyfriend from when you were 16 reads your book and then says sorry for how he treated you, you really did go all out, didn't you, in your book? What was that about?
Oh, I got a really lovely message from the boyfriend that I had when I was 16 who'd read my book and just sent me a sweet message saying he was sorry for being a teenage boy, basically. And
yeah.
Not very nice, but...
Because we get affected by what people do to us, but that's not their fault, is it? Isn't it our fault and how we deal with it?
I think, you know, you can't blame other people for what goes on. You've got to take responsibility for yourself, and you're never going to get through life unscathed. It's impossible. And it's all a learning experience. That's what I put it down to.
Okay, well, let's go through the solutions then. What sort of things are we looking to do if, obviously don't give everything away because we want people to buy your book, but what sort of things are we looking to do if we're going to solve our anxiety problems?
So I think a part of it is learning how to switch off and taking time to switch off, because we're constantly, you know, plugged in, there's information overload, we're on our phones all the time, checking emails. So creating some space where maybe you're, you know, switching your phone off for a couple of hours, or, you know, getting out and getting some exercise and not being necessarily in front of your computer all the time. Things like meditation, I talk about quite a bit.
Everybody talks about meditation at the moment.
Yeah.
It just seems to be that thing that if you haven't got it in your life, you're missing out. It seems to be the magical cure. Is it?
Have you dabbled in meditation?
Do you know what? I'm really trying again now, as Mark knows, because I just keep reading about how amazing it is for your health in everything, mental and physical. So I'm trying, but I do find it quite a difficult thing to do with my brain, which races a lot.
Yeah. I think that's the number one thing that people say. It's either they haven't got time or they feel like they can't kind of switch off enough to meditate.
You know what the Buddhists say, don't you? They say you've got to meditate for 10 minutes a day. Unless you don't have time, then meditate for an hour.
That's
apparently what they say, which is quite good. What does meditation do for you then?
So it changes the brain. It changes the amount of grey matter that you have. So you increase your level of grey matter, which helps you to be more in control of your emotions. So instead of getting kind of... going down the rabbit hole with your emotions, you feel more in control. It also calms down the fight or flight response. So that feeling of jitteriness or adrenaline, it calms that down. And I often think of it like, you know, you're actually upgrading your brain's hardware so that you can deal with the stresses of your life. You know, you can't go and live on a desert island, you know, just leave your stressful job and your family life. you know, but you can actually change the way your brain functions and make it more optimal so that you can deal with the stresses more easily.
So why do we get, what is anxiety then? Why do we get it? What's its purpose?
So it's a survival mechanism. You know, when we were evolving as cavemen and women, we, you know, if we were getting chased by a wild animal or attacked by another tribe, the fight or flight response gets triggered. We get a lot of adrenaline, a lot of energy so that we can fight or run away from the threat.
Yeah.
Our brains haven't kind of caught up to modern life yet. So we still get the fight or flight response getting triggered in situations where we might be under pressure, or, you know, if you're very tired, or if you've had too many coffees, or, you know, if you're going through a stressful situation, we go into that survival mode, that fight or flight mode. And that's what anxiety is, essentially.
And if it doesn't go away, so you're at work and you're in a horrible environment, but you can't run away and you can't hit out, you can't attack, you can't flee, that's when depression comes. Is that right? Or
yeah, there's a definite link between anxiety and depression, and they say that a stressed brain is a depressed brain, so there's definitely a link there.
So a panic attack is when you're hyperventilating or your pulse is racing because you want to get out of there or do something.
Exactly, yeah, your body's getting ready to run, but
in modern society, if you're in a office space, you can't do that.
Exactly, yeah.
So you need to calm yourself and realize that you're not being chased by a lion.
Essentially. Yeah.
I think I've got another book coming. Is anxiety on the rise?
It is, unfortunately. And if you look at, for example, the number of people that are Googling anxiety, it's doubled over the last 5 years. And it does seem to be on the rise, unfortunately.
Why?
I think there's a lot of pressure. I think it's the pressure of modern life and the speed of modern life and things like social media. We see what everyone's up to 24/7. We're comparing ourselves with other people. A lot of pressure to sort of tick boxes, must get the career sorted, must get married, must kind of buy a house. And there's a lot of pressure, I think.
Yeah, you talk in your book about observations of yourself, which made you anxious when you were younger because you were looking at yourself versus other people.
Mm.
How do you deal with those sort of problems?
I think the perfect solution would be just to get off social media, but that's not going to happen. And social media is great in lots of ways. I think it's about just trying as much as possible to come back to yourself and recognise the good things that you have going on in your life and the gifts and talents that you have. And instead of kind of looking at other people and thinking they're better, just coming back to yourself as much as possible.
Okay, well, that leads us nicely on to TW, who sent an email in to us, and I said we would get you to answer it. So it's in two parts. I won't bother reading the first part. I'll read the second part because it's important. It says, secondly, it's from TW, I have a skin condition, psoriasis, and it hampers me when I'm trying to find a partner, female. Do I tell them straight away or wait until the moment when we perhaps undress? What do you think he should do? Because obviously he's anxious about that.
And I think things like stress can make psoriasis worse. And I mean, I'm always of the opinion that it's best to be honest. You know, it's probably not a first date conversation to share that necessarily. But you'd be surprised how people are very often very understanding, very empathetic about those sorts of things. So I think honesty is always the best policy. And people probably don't care about that much.
That's kind of what I said, wasn't it, Mark?
Roughly, yeah.
I'm quite good.
Okay.
Well, I just said, one of my mates has got it, and he always says, it's their problem, not mine. I've got it. There's nothing I can do about it. So if they don't like it, that's fine. You know, people don't. I mean, some people don't like other people, full stop. So, whatever your condition is, it doesn't matter. What about diet? Because in your book, you discuss a lot about diet. Mark doesn't like this bit because he was scared that you might say drinking lager is not good for anxiety.
Oh, but I wouldn't take that away from you.
But you discuss what's good for you and what's bad for you. Let's start what's bad for you if you're an anxious person.
I think a bit of alcohol is absolutely fine, but you know, you have alcohol anxiety if you've had loads of drinks the next day, it's a nightmare. Everything, you're embarrassed about what you said, you've spent all your money, and there's that horrible feeling of dread. And obviously if you have anxiety, it's probably a good idea to keep an eye on the alcohol content that you're consuming. Things like caffeine, you know, it's not necessarily bad. I know we all love our coffee, but huge amounts of caffeine are going to be a problem. A small amount of caffeine, most people are okay with it. So just see what your body and your nervous system can tolerate.
This is a genuine quote, by the way, from my friend who is a Buddhist. He said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with caffeine as long as you don't have more than one cup a year. And I was like going, no, I need to drink caffeine. He's going, just give it up. And Mark keeps on telling me to give it up. I do love a bit of caffeine. What else is bad for you?
What else is bad? I mean, sugar, potentially, because of those sugar highs and lows. You know, if you have a load of chocolate and then you get that sugar kind of dip very quickly afterwards, and it leaves you feeling a bit shaky, a little bit kind of edgy. That feels like anxiety. So it can trigger that anxiety, I think. So be careful with sugar, I would say.
People are hating you now. I know. Hold on, I'm not allowed What else? You're now going to say...
I'll tell you what's good. I'll tell you what's good.
No, you're now going to say salt, aren't you? You're
going to say salt? No, salt's okay in my
salt's
book.
Okay. So, all right. So basically there's three things there which are really bad for you. And did you mention processed food as well? Or have I read that somewhere else? That's
a general kind of health thing to
basically you eat good food then good. All right, so what should we be eating?
So gut bacteria are really important. Did you know that there is 3 trillion bacteria in your gut?
No,
and
I
that's
didn't.
More than there are cells in your body.
Right,
so your gut bacteria make a lot of your serotonin, which is the happy hormone that makes you feel relaxed and happy. So you want to feed the good bugs. So to feed the good bugs, you can eat things like fennel and artichokes and garlic and onions. And they contain prebiotics, which help the good bugs. And eating things like probiotic yogurt is really good. So you want those bugs to be making good hormones.
I once heard, and I don't know how true this is, that there's a little ecosystem going on in your gut.
Mm.
And if you feed the bad food, it grows and then it triggers your mind to demand that sort of food because it wants it. Your stomach is literally telling your head what to eat. Is that true? Do you know anything about that? You don't.
It's often called the second brain.
Yeah.
There are loads of neurons in your stomach. I've heard that it's as many as are in a cat's brain. So you basically got a cat's brain in your stomach. So, you know, there's... I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but the stomach has a lot to answer for, I would say.
One of the big things that was... So we've got to eat well and we've got to relax. That's where we're at the moment. One of the things that everyone has when you say, look, I'm feeling low, I'm feeling depressed, which, you know, I've just said I've went through, people go, get yourself down the doctors and get some drugs. Now, that seems so alien to me. It doesn't seem to... But obviously, a lot of people, it does, and it helps them. Where does drugs come into this?
I would say that's a conversation probably for a doctor. I won't go into that too much. But doctors can do things like refer you to counselling or cognitive behavioural therapy. In some cases, it is potentially necessary for them to go down the drugs route, but I suppose you're not necessarily dealing with the root cause of the issue.
Mm.
You're not making the changes in terms of your thoughts and lifestyle and your kind of feelings that's really going to help you in the longer term.
That's a horrible question to ask you, wasn't it?
Really? I know, you put me on the spot there. I can't give medical advice.
It's a horrible question because a lot of people would probably be anti the drug thing. But the reality is some people need it because it's a chemical imbalance, isn't it? Which is sending you into panic attacks and anxiety. Our brain's quite complex. I'm sure there's a whole spectrum of things that where people get problems. Actually, I've just found a list here of some of the things that you get if you're suffering from anxiety, just in case you don't know whether you are. You can tell me whether this... I've got this list off the internet, so... overwhelming strike of panic, hyperventilation, pulsating or nagging chest pain, shaking and trembling, trouble breathing and or choking sensation, sweating, nausea or stomach cramps, dizziness, feeling faint or lighthearted, accelerating heartbeat or heart palpitations, numbness, particularly your feet and hands. This is quite extreme, this stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Feeling detached, unreal. Basically, you feel like you're going crazy. Fearing you're dying. Now, that to me seems like the extreme... That's what I've always thought was a panic attack and anxiety, the extreme version. But there is a very subtle version of that as well, which is just, I don't want to leave the house today.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, those things you've listed are the physical effects of anxiety, and a lot of the symptoms are physical. But yeah, feeling like you just can't face going out, feeling as if everything is difficult, feeling like everything is a nightmare, you know, having those sorts of thoughts and feelings can come into it as well.
What is a friend filter?
I
read that in your book.
You read that. Yep. So what I hear so much from people with anxiety is that the way they speak to themselves is really horrible. So, you know, you beat yourself up about things, you criticize yourself, you tell yourself you're an idiot, and we'd never speak to our friends that way because right. they wouldn't be our friends for very long and it wouldn't actually help them. You know, if you're telling someone they're an idiot, of course, you know, they're not going to hang around. Mm. So when you put something through the friend filter, you're thinking about, would I speak to my best friend in this way? And actually trying to sort of cultivate that kindness for yourself and that kinder way of speaking to yourself, because actually it's a lot more motivating when we're kind to ourselves. If you're mean to yourself, you know, it saps your energy. You just want to sit on the sofa and eat a takeaway, in my opinion.
I read something the other day. It's weird the way we do just literally talk to ourselves all day, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And if we verbalised it and actually did it out loud, everyone would think we were nuts. But in our heads, we're going, do I want an apple? I might have an apple. But if we actually said that, but we are hard on ourselves, aren't we? And that, I think that's the fundamental problem. Is it, you mentioned it earlier, you basically said it's all our parents' fault. It's your mum's fault, Chloe. That's it. It's basically your mum's fault. How do you stop that happening, though? If you've been given stuff, which, you know, as you say, parents can't help what they've done.
Mm.
They're probably just trying to do good stuff. But if you've been given sort of slight phobias or you know, anxiety problems, how can you cure that actual feeling then?
I think sometimes trying to figure out what it is you've taken on board, what are the beliefs that you've taken on board potentially. So I work with a lot of people that are very perfectionist, for example. You know, if their parents are very hard on them or critical or kind of maybe with the best intentions,
yeah,
wanting them to achieve academically and pushing them a lot, and they take on board this belief, right, I need to be perfect in order to be good enough. And sometimes just recognizing that belief that you've taken on board can be enough to start to change it. And maybe starting to tell yourself a new kind of story about that, you know, telling yourself, I can just do my best and that's always enough, or something like that.
So it's your belief system.
I think that has a lot to do with it, yeah.
You're narrating your own movie, aren't you? I heard the other day that, so it's up to you how you go through your life seeing what's happening. Is that true?
Yeah, it's a good way of describing it. I think we tell ourselves stories in our minds, you know, based on
they don't like
maybe
me.
Things that have happened in the past. Yeah.
They don't like me, and you don't have no understanding that they do or don't. They're probably not even thinking about you. So in your book, you've got lots of exercises. This is a DIY help yourself. It's very good. It's ways of calming yourself and everything else. If you would take on someone professionally, because you take on one-on-one patients, don't
yeah,
you? How does that process work then with the hypnotherapy and everything else? How do you get to the root of the problem and solve it?
Yeah, so often it's about, you know, trying to figure out what their beliefs are. So very often it's things like, I'm not good enough, or there's something wrong with me, or I can't cope, and helping them to change those beliefs using hypnosis, where you become very receptive to different perspectives. Sometimes I do something called regression, where you ask them to think about what things from the past might be at the root of things. And it's really interesting. During hypnosis.
Well, I was a 16th century barrow boy.
Oh, did you ever heard
one of those? No, sorry.
Not the past life stuff. No, I don't do the past life stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking about what past events could have been sort of really significant in terms of the anxiety and helping them to kind of resolve that somehow.
I've never got to the bottom of how hypnotherapy works.
You have to come and have a session.
Oh, that's scary.
You're scared.
Shall I bring some onions?
I'm hypnotising you now. Don't look me in the eye.
How does it work? Is it easy? Do you know how it works?
Help someone to get into a very kind of relaxed state where the conscious mind kind of gets into this daydream and your subconscious can take things on board more easily when you're in that state.
That's essentially how it works. Controls me, subconscious or conscious?
Your subconscious, I would say.
So I was just discussing this with Mark earlier about giving up smoking, where we don't actually know how to move our arm. Oh, I can't be bothered to go into this. So I've got a great way of giving up smoking. I'll tell you after we finish this podcast. But I think I'm about to write a book on it. So it's good. Listen, thank you so much. I've got a final piece of just... Actually, let's go through the final questions, because we're going to ask all our guests this, and you can give us some advice on these. What advice were you... This is the first one on you. What advice were you given that has been invaluable to your life?
So my granny told me, the time to enjoy your life is now. Don't put it off. Because I think up until a few years ago, I was working all the time, kind of pressuring myself to sort of be successful or something like that. And I wasn't really taking that time to really enjoy things. And when she said that to me, it kind of made me take stock and realise, actually, you need to prioritise kind of enjoying your life and happiness now, because there's no guarantee that once you've reached a certain goal or milestone in your life that you're going to feel happy because of it, because we're always moving the goalposts. So focus on being happy now.
Yeah. Do you think we're always searching for something which is going to make you happy, which doesn't actually exist? Do you think that's what a lot of people do?
I think we quite often think there's this future paradise, and, you know, if we could only kind of just get through this, if we could only get that promotion, or once we get a partner or something like that, then we'll be happy. But actually, happiness happens in the moment, so we've got to make the most of it now.
Once I'm married, everything will be all right.
Yeah.
And then you come back off the honeymoon. Mm. I've heard this happen a few times, only just because someone was discussing it the other day with me. You come back off the honeymoon, you're like, didn't fix everything. Just lost a few quid and I've got myself, I'm married, but it's still the same problems are there. Yeah, okay, that's interesting. That's like that thing we talk about on the show. You know, if you live in the past, you can suffer from depression. If you live in the future, it's anxiety. Live in the now. That's basically what you're saying. Granny a Buddhist?
She's an incredible person. She's a meditation teacher,
actually. Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, God. For anyone who's listening, give us some hints on how to meditate then. How'd you do it?
Okay, so take the pressure off yourself that you need to clear your mind. Just think of it as going through a process, and the benefit is in the process. You can use a guided meditation, find loads on YouTube, or there's one on my website.
What's your website? Give us that address.
It's karma-u.com. So karma-u with a hyphen in the middle. And you can download a sort of guided meditation there. Or there's apps like Headspace, which guides you through a 10-minute kind of mindfulness meditation. And just focus on knowing that the benefits are amazing, and you just need to just do it, rather than thinking you need to clear your mind or reach some kind of zen state where you're doing it. Just do your 10 minutes a day.
Just 10 minutes?
It can be 10 minutes, yeah. It's enough to make an impact.
And how long do you think it would take before you can actually be any good at it? Or does it happen from day one, you're making impact on your life?
From day one, yeah. It's a practice. So just doing the practice is where the benefit is. Okay. You have to be good at it. I think that's what holds a lot of people back. You think, right, I need to be in lotus position, clearing my mind. And if you think you can't switch off, you think, oh, it's not for me.
But what happens when you're breathing? And could you concentrate on your breath, or you do a chant? Which one do you do?
I say a mantra, so a little sound.
You're not allowed to
tell
me, though, are you?
It's a secret.
Is
it?
Ah.
It could be anything. It could be apple. You could just be saying apple to yourself in your head again and again, and it would take you into that deeper state of mind.
I'd probably go for onion, Chloe. And when the thought comes into your head, because you're going onion, 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 and then you go, oh, might taste of an apple, comes into your head, and then what then do you do to get rid of the thought that your onion might taste of an apple, or whatever you're thinking about, or what am I gonna have for dinner tonight? How do you get rid of the thought?
You don't need to get rid of this thought. As soon as you realize that you're thinking, you just go straight back to your mantra or your breathing. No pressure, no need to berate yourself. Just going straight back to it.
I'm going to give it a go. Right, what one piece of advice would you like to give to our listeners that can help them?
I think something really simple, like making your bed in the morning. Because it's a small achievement, it's a small win that almost creates a sense of momentum for kind of achieving other things or getting other sort of positive things done in the day.
It's very simple as that.
Make your bed in the morning.
Make your bed in the morning. I was just saying to Mark, actually, I read something online. I'm doing a lot of reading about this stuff at the moment because I'm doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And someone said, when you go to bed at night, rather than go, God, thank God that day's over, focus on the next day, saying how wonderful that day is going to be. And then when you wake up, this is the bit I've never been able to do, but I've just started doing it. When you wake up, rather than lying in bed, hitting snooze button, jump out of bed and start the day. And they also say make the bed there.
Uh-huh.
Jump out of bed, start the day. As soon as you wake up, and get on with it rather than hanging around. And then you start in the right frame of mind. I've done it for 2 or 3 days and I'm really tired. Because I keep waking up at 6 in the morning and going, oh God, here we go. All right, what mistake do people make? Maybe doing your job or just in life, what mistakes are people making?
Potentially it's around sleep and not getting enough sleep and not really prioritizing sleep. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who's a doctor, and we were saying how we both agree that getting sleep is probably the most important thing you can do for your mental health, for your well-being.
Diet.
And diet, well, yep. There's diet, there's sleep.
No, I mean sleeping for diet. If you're hungry, you have to eat calorific food because you feel tired.
Yeah.
And so it's harder to diet if you're tired. Though, right, because this is your expertise, you're anxious. We all have been through this. Every single person on the planet has been through this. You're anxious, you've got something to do with your work, something to do with your partner. You lie in bed, you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep, you're thinking about sleeping, you can't sleep. And this can go on for weeks on end. How do you break that cycle? What can you do if you're not sleeping?
So either I would say write down what you're worried about. I think it's something about getting it down on paper that helps you to get it out of your head. Or read some fiction, some kind of distraction, something just to take your mind off your worries and kind of distract yourself. So reading some fiction.
Okay, but sleep's important, we know that. And finally, any life hacks? Do you know what these are? These are just pearls of wisdom and things like that where we can change our lives a bit.
Yeah, so my life hack would be to, at the end of the day, either by yourself or having a conversation with your family or your partner or your kids, to look back on the day and talk about three good things that happened that day. Because so much of anxiety is around kind of thinking about the future and thinking negatively or spotting the problems everywhere. And by noticing the good things, you train your mind to be more positive and to spot the good things automatically. And it's just a nice thing to do at the end of the day. Instead of sort of whinging about your day, you talk about, I had this great, conversation with someone at work, or had a really nice lunch that day. You're just kind of talking about the good things that happened. And there's loads of evidence to say that this helps with even things like depression, anxiety. It's really simple.
Mark, you need to do a bit of that, because he can get a bit morose sometimes, can't you? He can. Do you know, I used to do something which, Stephen Peters, who wrote The Chimp Paradox?
Oh, yeah.
I discussed this with him, and I thought he would think it was brilliant, but he said it was actually nuts. But what I used to do, I spent a little while doing that. I don't do it anymore, but I worked out that roughly 9 bad things would happen to me a week. And so things like parking tickets and, or whatever, just bad things. Someone was rude to me or something. So as I went through the week, I would note them down. And then if it was under 9, I'd go, that's a successful week. And if it was over 9, I'd go, oof, that's a bit of a bad week. Hopefully I'll get back down to 9. And I thought that was a really good way of looking at life. So when I got a parking ticket, I'd go, it's just one of my 9. But he said it was a little bit nutty. Chloe, what's your thoughts on that?
That's potentially focusing on the negatives, so it's probably not going to be great. Start counting the 9 good things that are happening in the week instead and see.
I am going to write a book on it, Chloe.
Yes,
you should. I've got 3 books in the go at the moment. Anyway, listen, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. Your book is The Anxiety Solution, A Quieter Mind, A Calmer You. Simple Steps for Managing Anxiety. It's a good read. I enjoyed reading that. If you've got a website, have you?
What's that? So it's calmer-you.com, and people can get a free hypnosis MP3 if they head over there.
Have you got a little community on there where people can talk to each other and
I've
stuff?
I've got a Facebook group called Calmer You Community, which is a place where people can offer support and ask questions. And
do you go on there?
I go on there, yeah, I'm in there all the time.
All right, so everyone sits there and discusses anxiety and things?
Yeah, in the Facebook group, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And on Twitter, who are you?
I'm C. Brotheridge.
C. Brotheridge. So, follow her. So follow Chloe and get rid of your anxiety. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Dear Lovejoy.
Mark, thoughts on Chloe?
Great, absolutely great. Yeah, it's quite interesting to hear it all being spoken about and some of the things that I've encountered myself.
Anxiety is a bitch, Mark, and we have a solution. Do you know what I'm going to do? And
go
I
on.
Think you should do with me is we should try meditation.
You can't do it with other people, can you?
No, I don't mean with me. I don't want you coming over every morning to do meditation with me for 10 minutes.
Like Bert and Ernie.
I don't mind. I'd like to do it with you, but it's a bit of a waste of your journey, isn't it? God, where are you going? Oh, I'm just going to go and spend an hour getting to Tim's house to do 10 minutes worth of
really
meditation.
Really stressed out on the way there. Really stressed out on the way back.
You could do it, though. We could sit in our pyjamas and look out the window together. I don't mind if you want to come over, but I think we should try it. I'm going to try it. I just keep hearing
over... I want to try that thing on our website, actually.
Yeah, over and over and over again, I keep hearing meditation is just so good for you. It's just, when I try, my mind races so much, and it's, I don't know. But let's give it a go.
All right.
Do you want to give that a go? No. Yeah, I mean, no, are you intrigued by it or not?
It's going to go the way of you trying to cure my musophobia. We'll forget about it in about a week's time.
Well, no, we can do it on your own, that. Do you think you'll try that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought Chloe was lovely. And the one question I forgot to ask her, and I was just, when I was just walking out with her, I just said to her, what does it feel like helping people? And she said, well, that's the amazing thing about it, because so many people suffer from anxiety. And the actual fact that she's helping people overcome their anxiety is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Must be a great job, mustn't it, to you know, finish at night, you go home, you put your feet up and go, hey, I've helped some people today. A book's good, actually. It's got some exercises in it, which you can do if you are suffering from anxiety all the way through it, different things you can do in different anxieties. It's got a planner at the back and everything. So it's not just a book to read. It's a book which is a doing book as well. There's lots of stuff on there. Anyway, Mark, that's it for this week. Anything else to add to the podcast at this stage?
No, I think you've done it all.
Okay, so that's the end of this part. That's the end of this podcast. We will see you all next Monday. Do you like an onion, Mark?
Oh, I thought it was an apple.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at schwabious.com.